So I'd like to say thank you also to Maestro Aaron for helping in the back and came in and worked hard to put everything together today. So thanks, Aaron. I want to actually pick up exactly where Rod took us during our liturgy segment as I share my drash here. He was talking about how we walk in the journey and how we understand the leading of God, how we stay on the right path, and how it is that God directs and leads us in our life as a community. And so in this parsha, I looked down and it was like, that is not the right one. In Behalotecha, in this week's Torah portion, Israel sets off from Mount Sinai. They've been camped at Mount Sinai now since the 20th chapter or 19th chapter of the book of Exodus. More than 50 chapters of the Bible are devoted to the 1 year, actually only about 10 months, that Israel spent camped at Mount Sinai. And in this Torah portion, they finally are setting off. And it describes in very dramatic terms the way that they are to camp. It is an amazing procession as Israel has taken down the tabernacle, packed up and covered those special things, that furniture that was within the tabernacle. People have packed up their own goods and their own tents, and they're ready to set off. It's kind of interesting. One of the Jewish commentators speculates that they actually traveled in a diamond shape instead of like a straight line. That Israel traveled in the shape like one group out in front, and then side by side, and then one spread out at the end. I don't know what it looked like, but Ron did describe the cloud that went ahead of them. It said that during the daytime, there was this cloud that they would see, and at night, they said that the cloud looked like fire. And so Israel sets out, and in verse 33, it says that they march from the mountain of the Lord a distance of 3 days. And the ark of the covenant of the Lord traveled in front of them on that 3-day journey to seek out a resting place for them. And the Lord's cloud kept above them by day as they moved on from camp. It says that the purpose of this cloud was to move ahead of them to find a resting place for them. The word in Hebrew there is menucha. Menucha. It's a beautiful, beautiful Hebrew word. It doesn't show up too many times in Scripture. Interestingly, in Jewish tradition, the question was asked, when God got finished creating the world after 6 days, had created the animals, created humans, he created the sun and the moon, the question is asked, what did the world still lack? And the answer that's given is, the world still lacked menucha. The word is translated rest. The world still lacked rest. And so, on the seventh day, God created rest. He created a sanctuary in time. He created the Sabbath for where God rested from all his labors. And unfortunately, the creation that he made didn't rest with him. It just says God rested by himself. And the rest of Scripture, the remainder of Scripture, is trying to create a way that we can find that path into rest, that place into hope. How do we journey following God with rest? Though the people just set out on their march in Numbers chapter 10, we see that Moses has this unique song. It's a poem, really. It's a two-line poem. It says that whenever the ark, very interestingly, whenever the ark of the covenant set out, Moses would say, "Arise, Lord, and may your enemies be scattered, and that those who hate you flee from your presence." Very interestingly, we read this passage as we opened the Torah portion of the service. You know that song that Moses sang. We sing it every week. Arise, Lord. Kuma Adonai. Get up, God, and scatter your enemies. And then the second line of the poem is that when the ark rested, when it found that resting place, God would say, "Return, Lord. Return, O Lord, to the myriads of the thousands of Israel, the multiple tens of thousands of your people Israel. Return, Shuva Adonai, return, O Lord." So the picture of God going out ahead of his people, making that path, but causing God's enemies to flee. And I know that in your life, in my life, we have those headaches, those frustrations, those struggles. Somebody just this morning was telling me about a catastrophe in their home that's going to require, ultimately, the person said, "I'm going to just have to move. I can't put up with this. This is going to just destroy my house." And so we have these headaches. How do we deal with them? And we cry out, "God, you deal with it." It's interesting here that it says, "God, get up, arise, and scatter your enemies." I sometimes wonder if if my headaches are God's headaches, if my enemies are God's enemies, I think they're sometimes not one in the same. Sometimes I think we have enemies that aren't necessarily God's enemies. Do you remember Psalm 23? The psalm about the good shepherd? God sits us down at dinner where he fills our cup and he gives us those plenty of green pastures, plenty of nourishment. And we look up from the table, and who's sitting across from us? Our enemies. It says, you prepare a table before me, in front of my enemies. And it's as if God is saying, that person that's your enemy is not really my enemy, God says. God says, I haven't excluded them from the table. And thus that story about how you learn to feed each other across the table. We'll do that story at different times since that's really a tangent. So it says God causes his enemies to be scattered. I just really wish you'd say God caused all our issues to be scattered, all our headaches to be scattered, all the struggle to be scattered. Of course, those are the things that most often teach us, correct us, guide us in our lives, those struggles, the things that require patience in the suffering and require joy in the journey. Then I love this part. When the ark came to a rest, when it was time to set camp again, Moses would say, Shuvah Adonai, return, O Lord. Return to your people, to the tens and hundreds of thousands, to the millions of your people, Israel. Return, O Lord. It's kind of interesting. It says that when the ark set out, it doesn't even say about anybody carrying the ark. Do you remember who it was that carried the ark? We had that in the instruction from a Torah portion a couple weeks ago. Who carried the ark? The Levites, one of the clans of the Levites, not actually the priests, which makes this passage in the book of Joshua kind of interesting, because there it does talk about the priests carrying the ark. So was it the Levites or the priests? I don't know. You can let me know your theories or your ideas. In Joshua chapter 4, here the people are at the Jordan River. They're crossing the Jordan River. And it says that the priests who bear the ark remain standing in the middle of the Jordan until all the people had crossed over. It says they speedily crossed over. And in verse 11, when all the people finished crossing the Jordan, the ark of the Lord and the priest advanced to the head of the people. I think it's interesting there that it said the ark first. The ark advanced. Oh, by the way, the priest advanced also. It's almost as if the ark is moving by itself. The way that verse is worded. The ark of the Lord and the priest advanced. The ark moving along by itself. So In other words, to me, it sounds like, and so all the people had crossed over, and the ark then came out of the river to the head of the people. But then there's verse 15. Four verses later, it says, "So the Lord said to Joshua, 'Command the priest who carry the ark to come up out of the Jordan.'" So Joshua commanded the priest, "Come up out of the Jordan." And as soon as the priest who carried the ark of the Lord's covenant came out of the Jordan, and the feet of the priest stepped onto dry land, the river began to flow normally again, as it had been stopped up. So how do we balance those two verses? In verse 11, it says that the ark advanced out of the river to the head of the people. But then in verse 15 and 16, it says that the priest who carry the ark, they then came out of the river. Did the ark really move by itself in verse 11 out of the river? And then in verse 15 through 18, Yeah, 15 through 18, the priest came out of the river. I remember back in 2012, I did a teaching series through the book of Joshua. It was right after I got married. So in my mind, it was a really memorable period. And I loved it when I got to this chapter in Joshua, thinking about the ark moving by itself. The ark moving by itself out of the Jordan River. But isn't that exactly what Moses says? God, when the ark traveled, Moses would say. It doesn't say when the priest carried the ark, Moses would say, but when the ark moved ahead, Moses would say, "Arise, Lord." What is it about the ark moving that is significant for our lives? What is it significant about this resting place that the ark would seek out? In Psalm 68, we have part of the answer. In Psalm 68, it's quoting our Torah portion. I love it when the Bible quotes the Bible. I always find those passages very interesting to see what the second quote says that the first quote doesn't. It gives you a little behind-the-scene perspective on what's going on. Psalm 68 says, "God will arise, his enemies will be scattered, and his foes will flee before him." Do you hear the similarity to Numbers chapter 10? "Disperse them like smoke is dispersed, as wax melts before a fire, so the wicked will perish before God. But the righteous will rejoice. They will sing in the presence of God, and they will be exceedingly joyful." One translation says, "They will be merry and joyful." It says, in verse 8, "O God, when you went at the head of your army," here calling Israel an army, which is actually what the book of Numbers calls Israel. "When you went at the head of the army, you marched through the desert. The earth trembled. The sky rained because of God. Because of God, the God of Israel. You released a bountiful rain, like he's been doing for us. When your own land languished, you sustained it. Your tribes dwell there. O God, in your goodness, you provide for the needy. When God moves ahead of his people, he scatters the enemies and he provides for his people. He fills us with song. Did you hear that? But the righteous will rejoice. They will sing in the presence of God. Our Shabbat service should be the biggest full-throated singing that you do all week long. Yeah, that's right. In verse 12, the Lord gives a command, and the announcers, those that bring, I love this, and we'll talk about it some other time, those who bring the Besorah, the good news, the announcers of the good news are a great host. And they say, kings and their armies are in headlong flight. They're running away. Even those of you who lie among the sheepfolds, there are wings of a dove sheathed in silver in pinions of fine gold. The announcement when God goes ahead of his people in procession, it says the kings and their armies flee in headlong flight. But listen again to how it describes the people of God. Those of you who rest among the sheepfold have wings of a dove that is sheathed in silver and pinions in fine gold. You are covered in silver and gold encrusted when God leads us as a community. When God doesn't lead us as a community, things disintegrate. But when God leads us in community, scatters his enemies, we have to confront our own enemies and our own struggles in the strength that he gives us. But he causes his enemies to have flight. But in our flight, our wings are covered in silver, encrusted in gold. Beauty comes in the presence of God when he is leading us collectively as a community. Psalm 132 is the only psalm to mention the Ark of the Covenant. Psalm 132. Let us, picking up in verse 7, let us enter his abode. Let us bow at his footstool. And then we have this language, Kuma Adonai. Arise, O Lord, to your resting place, you and the ark of your might, the ark of your strength. Arise, Lord, to your resting place. By the way, there's that word again for rest, menucha. Menucha. Arise, Lord, to your resting place, you and the ark of your might. And if God's presence, if the ark of the testimony comes to a resting place, then we know now that the people will come into a place where we have collective wholeness together and beauty as a congregation. There we will have that singing. It describes it in verse 9. Your priest will be clothed in righteousness, and your loyal ones will sing for joy. You will be clothed in righteousness, and you will sing out loud. You will sing aloud for joy. For the sake of your servant David, who did not reject your anointed one, the Lord swore to David a firm oath, saying, someone from your own line I will set on your throne. If your sons keep my covenant, my decrees that I teach them, then their sons also, to the end of time, will sit on your throne. The promise of the kingship of Messiah. Mashiach, who would come. Here's this promise of Mashiach connected to the procession of God, of God leading his people. If God leads his people and takes his people to a place of rest, then the people are clothed in righteousness, meaning righteous deeds, righteous actions, faithfulness to God's commandments. Remember, in the book of Revelation, it says that those who are before God are clothed in fine linen. It is white, and it represents the righteous deeds of the holy ones. They're clothed in their righteous deeds. They sing for joy. They're silver and gold encrusted. And the Messiah, the Son of David, is revealed. Verse 11, one of your own line I will set on your throne. Down in verse 17 or 16, I will clothe its priest in victory. In the loyal ones will sing for joy. There I will make a horn sprout for David. I have prepared a lamp for my anointed one. The Hebrew word there is Mashiach. I have prepared a lamp for my anointed one. I will clothe his enemies in disgrace, but on his head a crown will sparkle. By the way, think back to last week when we talked about what the Nazir was, the one who would take this vow of dedication, and we connected it to that the word Nazir is connected to the word for a crown. But only a special crown, not a regular crown, a very special kind of crown. The word here, the last verse of Psalm 132, once again, is Nezer. That crown will sparkle, that crown of dedication and loyalty to the Lord. This is what happens when we fall in to step behind the Lord. When I was a kid, I played in marching band. And in high school. And I was in the percussion troupe. And I got to carry one of the big bass drums. Luckily, I didn't have the biggest one. But I also didn't get to carry the the smallest one either. And why does that matter? Well, for instance, one time when I was in marching band in high school, we were invited to participate in the Rose Bowl parade. It was even on TV. We're in the Rose Bowl parade, and in that heat, in that place, in those wool uniforms, I was wishing I carried the little bass drum. So my point is, when we would step off our program, there was a very particular step. The group or the whole band as an ensemble had to be in step together. They taught us how to do a little quick double step to get back in our right, left kind of routine. To stay in step with the group, when 100 people are moving along and then some one person's out of step, it really shows. It's really obvious to the judges. And as we, if we don't fail to move in unity as a congregation, it's really obvious to the judge, to the Most High of all the earth. Paul puts it this way. It says, we must keep in step with the Lord. Keep in step with the Lord. It's about being the collective marching singers of God. And sometimes we have loud clashing cymbals and lutes and harps and all those other things that we read about earlier too, right? What is the ark? How does that play into the New Covenant scriptures? One of the names for the Ark of the Covenant is actually the Ark of the Testimony. The Ark of the Testimony. And in 1 John chapter 5, Yochanan Aleph, chapter 5, it tells us, in fact, let me start reading at the beginning of the chapter. It really sets it in context. Whoever believes that Yeshua is the Messiah is born of God. And whoever loves the Father loves the one born to him. By this we know that we love the children of God when we love God and observe his commandments. That's the being clothed in righteousness part. For this is the love of God, that we keep his commandments. His commandments are not burdensome. For whatever is born of God overcomes the world, and this is the victory that has overcome the world, our trust. Whoever is born of God overcomes the world. And the struggles and the difficulties by moving together in the beauty, in the righteousness, in the song that God has, taking us to that resting place. Who is the one who has overcome the world but the one who believes that Yeshua is Ben Elohim? So, this is the testimony of God. Verse 9, if we receive the testimony of men, the testimony of God is even greater. If one's true, than the other, how much more true is the other kind of argument that Yochanan is making? If we trust the testimony of men, how much more the testimony of God? For the testimony of God is this, that he has testified concerning his Son. The testimony of God is Messiah. The testimony of God is Yeshua. So let me take you back to where we stepped into 1 John. How is the Ark of the Covenant revealed and portrayed in the New Covenant Scriptures? And I said that one of the names for the Ark of the Covenant is the Ark of the Testimony. The Ark of the Testimony. How is the testimony, the Ark of the God's testimony related to us in the New Covenant Scriptures? Yochanan tells us the testimony of God is this, that he has testified concerning his Son. How do we find that resting place? Menucha. How do we find that those clothes of righteousness, those righteous deeds, how do we find that expression of joy? They will shout for joy aloud. They will sing in the presence of God. How do we find this? It's in Messiah. It's in Messiah. Do you know God like this? Do you know God in this way? Not just do you know God, but do you know God in this particular way? Where God places his testimony in Yeshua. When the Ark of the Testimony traveled, Moses would say, "Rise up, Lord, and fight your enemies." And when the Ark came to a rest, Moses would say, "Return, Lord. Come back and have relationship and involvement with the thousands of your people, Israel." How do we have that relationship? How do we find that place of intimacy with the Lord? It's in Messiah Yeshua. I want to sing a song for you. I tried to get